Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio.
Hey, Hamlet! That's not Yorick, it's a soap!
A soap of infinite studs, of most excellent fancy.
Yep, it is pretty fancy. Soap on a rope.
To bathe or not to bathe, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the tub to suffer the suds and showers of outrageous smudges, or to take arms against a sea of bubbles and by abluting, end them. To wash, to soak. To soak, perchance, to clean. Aye, there's the rub.
Get thee to a soapery!
You'll lose your head over all our Halloween goodies like Yorick's skull soap on a rope. This and other body parts available at bubblegenius.com.
I'm Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, and I approve this message.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Mr. President.
Governor.
You enjoying the play?
I am. How about you?
Well, we just got here. We were at the Yankee game. We got hung up in traffic.
Yeah, I know. Something horrible happened about an hour ago. C.J. Craig was getting threats, so we put an agent on her. He walked into the middle of an armed robbery and was shot and killed after detaining one of the suspects.
Oh. Crime? Boy, I don't know.
We should have a great debate, Rob. We owe it to everyone. When I was running as a governor, I didn't know anything. I made them start Bartlett College in my dining room, 2 hours every morning on foreign affairs and the military. You can do that.
How many different ways you think you're going to find to call me dumb?
I wasn't, Ron. But you've turned being unengaged into a zen-like thing, and you shouldn't enjoy it so much is all. And if it appears at times as if I don't like you, that's the only reason why. In the future, if you're wondering, crime, boy, I don't know, is when I decided to kick your ass.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Pleasure is just a click away with radio as your guest. There's no quicker way, so click away. Radio does the rest.
Can you name all the members of the cabinet?
Okay, let's drop it.
What?
I mean, I am not going to take a test for you. I mean, if that came up in conversation...
We're conversing. Oh, no, the names of the cabinet have slipped my mind. Say, do you know them? Okay, don't name them for me. Just tell me if you know.
Yes, Aaron, I know the names of the cabinet.
Okay. All 12?
Yes.
There's only 10.
You're feeling good, aren't you?
I'm starting to, yeah. Hey, we may do capitals of the states next.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, September 20th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez.
Yes, it is.
And we're brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius, the best bath and body product you could ever possibly
purchase. I'm always shocked by that, by the way, that it's me, that I wake up every morning and I'm like, yeah, I'm still Chez.
Yeah, I thought you waited for me to point it out every week. I just wanted to remind you, Chez, you're Chez.
Yeah, I know. Oh, trust me, I know. You know, I always used to say that, like, one of the best ways, the way that I personally have prevented identity theft is to make my identity completely worthless.
Hey, you were on HuffPost Live speaking about
it. Oh, don't even get me freaking started.
Was it any good? I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, dear God.
Was it, like, last week, did they totally botch your name? Did they call you Chez Pizza Face or something?
I mean, at least that was, yeah, I mean, at least that appearance on Huffington, on HuffPost Live was interesting because there were interesting people and we talked about a pretty good topic. Apparently... I got brought on to talk about Kate Middleton's breasts because, as you know, I'm the foremost authority on princess boobs.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. You know, and earlier in the day, they had actually done a segment specifically devoted to, like, the topless pics of Kate Middleton. And the reason they wanted me on is because I had written that really kind of smart-assy piece, you know, throwaway piece for Daily Banter and Huffington about how, you know, who gives a crap about Kate Middleton's boobs? They're very nice, and she's gorgeous, but mm-hmm. really, in the great scheme of things, they're nothing spectacular. And by this time, it's like, have we really, like, not seen enough breasts? Aren't we used to this by now? Even from royalty, it shouldn't be that much of a shock. So they brought me on. And it turned out I didn't appear in that segment. I appeared in a segment a little bit later on in the day that featured Kevin Frazier from The Insider,
mm-hmm.
Which is just a god-awful show you are so f***ing hot O'Brien used to host.
Yeah.
And he's on that. By the way, the greatest answering machine messages in the history of everything.
Yes.
I listen to those. I still listen to those. They still make me laugh. So Kevin Frazier's on. And they're talking to him about sort of celebrity journalism, because I guess I think he runs his own, in addition to doing The Insider, he runs his own website, which I'm sure is a fine website. But he spends a good 10 minutes sort of pontificating on the fact that, you know, that celebrity journalism is, you know, he really is dedicated to it and it's important stuff.
Oh,
and, you know,
God.
And he works hard to get the real story. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and he mentioned not once, but twice that he's got, Chris Jenner said to him, look, you know what? When a story comes out about me, you know, and you want to talk about it, here's my number. You know, Kev, you can always call me personally and talk to me about it. And, you know, and I'm sitting there listening, and I'm about to have a Will McAvoy moment.
I'm waiting for that. Yeah.
I'm just, and it's a good thing, you know, thankfully the last time around, it's like you could see the faces of the people in the Google Hangout.
Yeah.
At least during certain segments, you could see it. So you could see sort of how we were reacting. Thank freaking God you couldn't see the look on my face.
Yeah, because
shut the hell up.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hitting myself in the face with a phone book. But, he's a nice guy. He's not a bad guy. So I'm not trying to be a jerk or anything. Mm-hmm. It's like my first reaction to him having said twice that Kris Jenner – you know, he knows Kris Jenner personally, was, you know, my first reaction was, wow, you know, I wanted so badly to say, wow, Kev, you know, Kris Jenner said to you, a celebrity news reporter, hey, if you ever want to talk about allowing me to promote my family, I'm always available. That's a – man, you must have a ton of clout, because that's a
– What a coup.
Exactly. What a get. And my second thought was, if I really wanted to be a jerk, the second thing that popped into my mind was, wait, so Kris Jenner basically gives her phone number to a hot black guy. There's a shock. Go figure.
My thought would be, if I was ever invited on like a show to talk about celebrity news and gossip, I would just say, you know, the guy goes off about the person who I don't even know. I don't even know who that is, to be perfectly honest. And my reaction would be, well, what does that have to do with wealth redistribution?
Right,
I want to know that.
I was brought on to talk about Kate Middleton's boobs.
Yeah.
So I got no issue with that. And they eventually – it was the crappy thing about it was so sort of ham-fisted. It's like they eventually kind of worked really hard with a crowbar to turn the conversation to Kate Middleton. And I was on for like – if I was on for 60 seconds, it was amazing. In a pretty long segment, you know, and then they got back to talking. The two hosts and Kev went back to talking about, you know, their favorite shows up for the Emmys. But yeah, the whole time I'm just like, I'm burying my head in my hands. Like, wow, is this just freaking stupid?
So there are what, 12 guests on at the same time too? I mean, there was you, there was this other guy, there were the two hosts, and the last time I saw HuffPost Live when you were on, there were like 12 other people. And so you got a sum total of like 30 seconds over the course of an hour and a half.
Right. See, no, that's the thing, actually. It was this time, it was me and it was Kev. I love calling him Kev. It's so much fun, because he kept sort of referring to himself as that, and so did the hosts. But it was Kev and it was me in the Google Hangout. And then there was the two hosts, which are two women who, you know, once again, seemed really nice. You know, they're based out of L.A. That's all I know about. One of them had a great British accent, so.
Well, good. That sounds exciting. Sounds pulse pounding.
Oh, it is. It's Romney fever, catch it.
But at least they pronounced your name correctly, huh?
They pronounced my name correctly. They got it right.
That's good. Well, they're growing. They're evolving. They're seems to be improving over there at HuffPost Live. But I think it's great. I mean, this is Roy's kind of, this is Roy's thing. I mean, this is something that Roy developed, Roy Seekoff of the Huffington Post, and I wish him well on it.
Is he in charge of that? I mean, good. I like going on. It's obviously, I spend all my day sitting in front of my computer, so it's never difficult. It's never like, you know, wow, it's really putting me out. It's, you know, it's something that, you know, if you give me a call and ask if I can be on it, 9 times out of 10, I'll be sitting in front of my computer anyway. So sure, of course, it takes 2 seconds.
Well, what they need to do is get more people in studio. I mean, you're right there. I mean, they're in Los Angeles, right? I mean, that's where HuffPost Live is based, right?
They're based out of New York and L.A., yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so you could easily go to their studio, but instead I guess they want to look user-generated or something like that, so they do everything via Google Hangout or whatever it's called?
I'm betting it probably is – I mean, I don't know what their studios are like, but having worked in TV, it may actually be much, much more effort for them to bring – for me to come into studio and for them to mic me and light me and all that other crap than it would be to just, you know, hey, look, you're sitting in front of your freaking – you know, the funny thing that they did comment on that everybody comments on is the fact that when I'm Skyping, I do it in my dining room, and my wall, my dining room wall is a gigantic picture of New York City from the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
So I'm in L.A. And they, you know, they said, they're like, apparently you are standing right in the middle of the bridge. And I said, yes, I am. And I'm about to jump, which, you know, little did I know, I actually wanted to jump about 10 minutes later.
Yeah. You know, when I saw that framed poster on your wall there of the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, the first thing I thought, oh, look, it's New York as seen by hipsters.
It is.
it's like the Brooklyn Queens point of view of Manhattan. You know,
Dumbo, you would see the underneath of the Manhattan Bridge. Down to the Manhattan Bridge overpass. That's what Dumbo stands for.
Yeah, let's get into politics here. You know, as we've both written about all week, there's lots of stuff to talk about, I think, with regards to the Mitt Romney meltdown. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about how crappy Mitt Romney is as a candidate, not even as a guy. I mean, just basically as the sort of nuts and bolts of being a politician, he's terrible at it. Who could have predicted that it would get this bad? And it's gotten really, really bad. It's really, really bad. I mean, so you talk about the last 4 weeks in the Romney campaign. It's been relentless, right?
Yeah, I mean, every week it's something new, and he continues to dig a hole deeper and deeper for himself, or someone exposes the fact that he's dug a hole deeper and deeper for himself.
Yeah, but these are all on critical issues and critical events in the course of the campaign. So you rewind back to the week of August 27th, the Republican convention. It was disastrous. Romney's speech, the speech in which he's supposed to introduce himself to casual viewers, to casual voters who haven't been following the primaries and all the, you know, all the infights and Republican drama throughout the course of the previous year. He said, well, who's this guy? So we go to find out. Everyone tunes in, and they get this doddering old man doing a weird performance art thing. And he ends up losing ground in the polls. And then the following week is a huge Democratic convention. Michelle Obama, President Clinton, Deval Patrick, and all these guys just ripping, the president himself, of course, just ripping into Romney and the Republicans and getting a huge bounce out of that convention. So then the next week is the September 11th embassy attack in Benghazi, and he completely bungles that. And then he bungles the response to his response.
Mm.
And then this week, it starts out with the Politico piece, which I thought was going to be the big story of the week, the sort of the insider look at the Romney campaign. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking about that. You're right. The Politico piece was pretty painful. And then there was the big, well, look, we're rebooting him, which is the best choice of words ever.
Yeah, I love that. They hit control alt delete.
Exactly.
On Mitt Romney's neural net processor.
Wiped Romney's brain.
And so they do. And then David Corn at Mother Jones drops this video. And the video is so filled with stuff. It's like, you know what I compare it to? It's kind of like when your kid goes trick-or-treating and you get that gigantic pillowcase filled with candy. There's enough candy in there to last 3 months. So, I mean, you could be piecing apart this video for the next, you know, whatever it is, 45 days left in the campaign before Election Day. I mean, And some of it, I don't mean to make it seem as if it's trivial, because it's not. It's actually quite serious. And the thing is,
it's funny. It is. It's funny. It's watching the video itself, which is shocking and offensive and funny at the same time. Watching his reaction to it, where, you know, I had just come back from dropping off Inara, so, like, you know, he's giving his reaction speech, his hastily called, as everyone, you know, said, news conference, which really did make him look like a man in the throes of a panic attack.
Genuinely.
His response was horrible. It was a really bad idea to do what he did. But, you know, I was getting out of the airport when he's in Orange County giving that, giving that speech. I'm watching it on TV in the airport. But that, then watching Fox, you know, as John Stewart ran down, watching Fox News ignore it, then embrace it, then try to slam Mother Jones in saying it's part of a liberal plot, as if where it came from has any bearing at all on the massive amount of video you're seeing. And then my favorite part of their reaction, which is when they get all antsy about the quote unquote 2 minutes of missing video in this like 47 minute tape, as if that's the one place where he says, by the way, I'm going for the next 47 minutes, I'm going to pretend to be someone else.
Yeah, that's right. Here's the surefire way to solve the economy. And by the way, here's some information about how we can create Middle East peace. And it's all in that 2 minutes.
Right. Or like I said, he said, as if that's the setup, and the setup is, okay, look, for the next 47 minutes, you're going to hear me basically pretending to be someone else. So this, none of what I'm saying is serious here.
Yeah, here's how we make jetpacks out of fudge, and how I'm going to give one to every American. That's just not the 2 minutes. Well, then others, they're saying that maybe it was selectively edited. Like there was some sort of weird editing going on, and that missing 2 minutes is we're talking about. It's so Nixonian, it really is. And in fact,
support James O'Keefe.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Reuters' Jack Schaefer wrote a great piece about sort of Romney as the Nixon side of Romney. And as I pulled this quote out of this Reuters piece, the camera hated Nixon, Jack Schaefer writes, and it showed. In 1968, Roger Ailes, now the head of Fox News Channel, worked on the Nixon campaign as a consultant and improved the candidate's stagecraft. Yet the camera still magnified Nixon's internal discontent. Romney, a more handsome version of Nixon, doesn't sweat or glower when facing the lens. But press encounters tend to give him the yips. I love that. Press encounters gives Romney the yips.
Yeah.
Y-I-P-S. Jamming his efforts to pave a communications groove with voters. Like Nixon, Romney reflexively despises the press, which he blamed for the disaster that was his July foreign policy trip. Quote, Romney is the most patently phony presidential candidate since Nixon, says Greenberg, author of Nixon's Shadow, The History of an Image. The most talented politicians express a natural ease by backslapping or chit-chatting with people. Nixon and Romney don't have that skill, but they try anyway. That's so great. That's so dead on. That's so smart.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and come back and get into this a little more right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And we're back. Talking to the press gives Romney the yips. That's such a great way to put it, because he is like... He's so ill at ease with himself. He just doesn't... He has such a hard time handling himself when he's under pressure. And you're exactly right. It looked like he was having a nervous breakdown.
Yeah. He's not good at it.
He's definitely not good at it. Definitely not good at it. You know, and I think it's because I tell you what, it gives him a sense of desperation. He just seems crazy desperate right now. Like he knows all of this crap is landing on his head in big piles. I compared it to Biff Tannen careening into the back of that dump truck in Back to the Future, and all that crap comes flowing off into his car. He just knows it's happening.
Right.
And he doesn't know how the hell to get out of it. And certainly
because he knows it's happening. And yet, you know, Ezra Klein, I just put it up on Facebook. I think it was published yesterday in Bloomberg, wrote what I, and there've been a lot of really great pieces written in response to this, but I think Ezra Klein wrote what I thought was the best sort of all encompassing why this 47% comment matters and what it says about Romney. And it's funny because while he knows how bad things are sucking right now, it's odd because he is so completely unself-aware as a candidate and as a person. You know, the quote, my favorite quote from the Ezra Klein piece says, you know, Romney apparently thinks it's folks like him who've had it, who've really had it hard. I have inherited nothing, the son of a former auto executive and governor told the room of donors. Everything Ann and I have, we earned the old-fashioned way. This is a man blind to his own privilege. Mm-hmm. And that's it. He's completely blind to how good he's got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know a lot of wealthy people pride themselves in sort of forcing their kids to kind of make their own way, at least initially. But there's always that safety net. I know, yeah. You know what? Oddly enough, I once read an interview with George Lucas, of all people. You know, he's got more money than God. I said, well, your kids, are you going to just support them? And he said, well, no, I'm going to, in his classic way, George Lucas, he said, no, they're going to have to go out and they're going to have to do it themselves. But, you know, the big secret is that no matter what happened to Mitt Romney and his wife, there was always Dad to pick up the pieces.
It's going to be their own responsibility to make really, really great movies and then spend the next 40 years screwing them up.
Right. Right. I mean, you two wrote a great song. Daddy's going to pay for your crashed car. That's what it's all about. It's like if anything crazy happened to Romney, he lost any money. Well, I mean, what we know, and this kind of leads into another topic of discussion regarding Romney, is, for example, when Bain Capital needed a bailout, there was the federal government with $10 million to hand over to Bain Capital to bail it out. You know, and that's not even considering his significant family wealth. You know, so there's lots of backstops for someone like Romney.
I mean, when David Brooks gives you crap and calls you country club.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's astonishing now is 4 years ago, you had guys like David Brooks, you had Peggy Noonan, other sort of what Michelle Malkin would disparagingly call sort of inside Washington elitist Republicans slamming Sarah Palin. I mean, they were just relentless on Sarah Palin. Remember, there was sort of an open mic thing with Peggy Noonan ripping Sarah Palin.
Oh, yeah.
But this time around, they're going after the top of the ticket. And that's really bad news. I mean, you talk about someone who, speaking specifically about David Brooks, he's someone who moderates read, who's middle of the road, undecided people read. And so sometimes they say, well, he's sometimes right and he's sometimes left. And you know, he's kind of fair that way. I disagree with that assessment myself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love listening to, you know, or reading Taibbi stuff, ripping him an ass. It's great.
Oh, yeah, totally. But the everyday, not everyday political observer, when they want a piece of opinion, they'll pick up, a David Brooks column and see what he has to say. So that's
He's got the view from the Upper East Side.
Sure. And at the same time, he's influential as far as that weird, you know, Washington, D.C. conventional wisdom goes. Got a story about that later on regarding Jim Vandehei. But this is like a cascading pile of crap descending upon Mitt Romney. Already, the polls look like a mess. It's starting to the race is starting to break up. I mean, Gallup is still showing neck and neck numbers. In fact, Gallup today is 46-46, which is astonishing to me.
It is. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why I think I try really hard to sort of – on this particular story, I've tried really hard to get outside of the get outside of sort of the echo chamber. Because, of course, look, liberals have their own echo chamber too. You know, they do. I mean, I'm not saying that there's, you know, I'm not playing the both sides thing. But I've tried to sort of get outside the Huffington Post and Salon and all what I genuinely consider to be rational people who are furious at Romney and basically think that this should be a candidacy-ending screw up and read sort of some of not just the objective press, but, you know, some of the right wing stuff as well and see what their take on it is. And because as far as I'm concerned, yeah, I think this should have blown him out of the water. I found it infuriating. And I'm somebody who, you know, look, I'm not a fan of Mitt Romney, but, you know, as I've said from the very beginning, I'll take a smart Republican any day of the week. At least it'll be an interesting race, a nice battle of ideals, provided each side is approaching it from the perspective of not wanting to completely, you know, violate the country. But yeah, this is, you know, it is interesting to me to sort of read the polls and see, wow, you know what, there's still a lot of polls anyway. They're still pretty damn close. Yeah. You know, now this could be BS. We could see the kind of thing where, you know, it looks like that, but come election day, Obama wins in a rout. But I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I think the margin is widening, and that's what we're seeing. I think Gallup is lagging.
I think this stuff is starting to have an effect. There's no doubt about it. It's just too much.
Well, there's a couple of things happening, and we mentioned a little bit of this last week, in which a lot of voters are making up their minds now because they're seeing November right around the corner, and so they're starting to decide. They're starting to see more of the candidates. They're starting to hear more news going on. They're starting to engage in what's happening in the country, and so they're deciding which way they want to go. So that's part of it. But the other part of it is the fallout of all of this, you know, as we kind of documented there, 4 weeks of insanity for the Romney campaign where it's just crash and burn. Every step of the way, everything they've tried, and that's understating it. But so what we see now is Gallup. Well, yeah, it was 47-46 on Wednesday, and today Thursday, it's 46-46 on in Gallup. But you turn over to Rasmussen, the go-to poll for the far right. The Republican poll leans heavily Republican. This is sort of the whoopee, the security blanket for Republicans right now who just don't want to see this thing slip through their fingers. So they're just clinging on to this Rasmussen poll. Rasmussen today, it's got Obama up by 2 percentage points.
Yeah.
Rasmussen. And that you lump that on top of the 5-point margin for the president, according to NBC News and Wall Street Journal. Then you got an 8-point margin, according to Pew, which I think is a little bit of an outlier, but it's kind of indicative of where things are moving polling-wise. And then some state-by-state polls. Fox News shows Obama leading Romney in Ohio, 49-42, Virginia, 50-43, Florida is 49-44 among likely voters. That's just not That's the correct. Broader registered voter. These are likely voters. We got to take a short break for Bubble Genius back after this. Show today brought to you, as it always is, by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best bath and body products you will ever, ever try and purchase. You want to support liberal businesses, independent businesses. This is the one you want to start with, because there's no need to buy your crap from big box stores or any of the department stores. Just go to BubbleGenius.com and order all the bath and body products you could ever possibly need, and you'll feel good about it. Not only when you receive the products and you smell really good and you feel really clean, but also knowing that you supported a liberal, independent, all women organization. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio.
Hey, Hamlet! That's not Yorick, it's a soap!
A soap of infinite suds, of most excellent fancy.
Yep, it is pretty fancy. Soap on a rope.
To bathe or not to bathe, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the tub to suffer the suds and showers of outrageous smudges, or to take arms against a sea of bubbles and by abluting, end them. To wash, to soak. To soak, perchance, to clean. Aye, there's the rub.
Get thee to a soapery!
You'll lose your head over all our Halloween goodies like Yorick's skull soap on a rope. This and other body parts available at BubbleGenius.com.
I'm Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, and I approve this message.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. In addition to, you know, leading in all of these swing states, Ohio, Virginia, Florida, among likely voters by a significant margin. 5 points here, 7 points there, another 7 points in Ohio. In each state, more voters believe the Obama administration's policies have helped rather than hurt the economy. So president's gaining on the economy, which is pretty damn interesting. I mean, I want to say it's in addition to kind of getting the idea that things will improve in the second term, they're also seeing Romney without any ideas whatsoever. And one of those indicators is this kind of resurrection of a failed McCain-Palin attack. The Obama's a wealth redistributor attack. Right. He wants to, right, you know, spread the wealth around, which is true. It's actually it's completely accurate to say that president's in favor of wealth redistribution.
As has been every other president in history.
Everyone just does. Yeah. Just about every American supports wealth redistribution. That's how the government functions. The government collects taxes, whether it's through progressive tax or, as some Republicans proposed, flat tax. Because still, even if you have a flat tax, let's say you have a 14% flat tax, everyone pays the same tax rate, which is not fair. It's regressive. Still, the rich are going to pay more in dollar figures than the poor will pay.
Right.
Because the poor earning in middle class are earning less money than rich people. So that money gets all thrown into a big pile and then distributed all around, you know. First there's the distribution where it's the economy and jobs, and that's creating wealth, and then it gets redistributed by the government through taxes and expenditures on a wide variety of things.
Yeah.
And this is how things work. So Romney's in favor of redistribution of wealth. Paul Ryan is. I wrote about in my column this week, even Ron Paul is in favor of it. He's collecting Social Security, for God's sake.
Yeah, but he's falling back on it because he has to, because that's the problem. That's the problem with the nanny state. You know, you just can't help yourself. It's like an addict.
That's right, yeah.
Ron Paul's so full of crap.
Well, that's
and
what
so are his freaking fans.
Well, that's what they'll say. They'll say, well, you know, we paid into the system or the money's there. Why not take it?
Yeah.
Well, it's still wealth redistribution.
It's interesting because I was looking at BuzzFeed and their political reporter was at the Romney rally in Sarasota today, which, by the way, Sarasota is Romney country. A bunch of really, really old people in Florida. And one of them had a sign. They took a picture. And one of them had a sign that said, no redistribution to freeloaders, only to the – what is it? Only to the needy or something like that. And as I'm watching, looking at, you know, the guy, the white guy holding this sign, I'm just thinking, you know, I'm not going to play the race card, but it's like – you could just see that it's something that you've talked about, I've written about, Matt Taibbi has written about it at length, about the sort of irony of these people riding around on their hover rounds, you know, these old white people riding around on their hover rounds and getting money from the state, and they don't see themselves as living off the government teat because, well, they deserve it. You know, those other people, they're all freeloaders. Yeah. We deserve it, though. Why not? We're real Americans.
Well, that's the code word in all of it. That's right. When you say redistribution, they don't know what it means. They don't know what it means. They have no idea. They have no idea that it's basic taxation and spending on the part of the government. You know, but what they think is it's, you know, those filthy brown people taking the hard-earned money that I earned and while they sit on their asses and collect Obama bucks. You know, that's what they're hearing. They think that's what it is. But they're clueless, and Romney's counting on that cluelessness.
Right, and it's interesting because, once again, that Ezra Klein piece, it starts off by saying that you can almost understand at least the first part of the big 47% or you know, the first part of the big quote from the Romney fundraiser that got circulated. You can kind of understand where Romney's coming from because he, as Ezra Klein puts it, Romney can't wrap his head around the idea that there is this, you know, that there's this guy who, by all accounts, should be a failure as a president, considering You know, considering the unemployment rate right now, Romney can't wrap his head around the fact that he can't beat him. And so he has to sort of draw for everyone else and for himself this vision of the fact that there are people engaging in sort of a transactional thing where Obama's giving them free stuff and therefore they're voting for him. Mm-hmm. That's why. He's a crack dealer and they're going for it. So that's sort of the image he has to – the picture he has to paint both for himself and for his supporters.
I have kind of a theory as to why exactly the president is doing and continues to do so well in spite of the economy. We'll get into that after a last quick break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Silver Sun pickups.
Silver Sun pickups.
Hmm? What'd you say?
I saw them live. I love Silver Sun.
It's a great album, too.
Yeah.
So my theory about why the president is doing so well in spite of, you know, continued weirdness of the economy. I don't say the economy's doing bad because I think it's doing much better since the president's policies have been in effect. And over the last 3 years, it's really come back in a serious way, considering the depth of the recession in the first place. I think people are still satisfied with the president. I'm not just talking about liberals and Democrats, but moderates, centrists, undecided people. I think they're satisfied with, after 8 years of incompetence, someone who just exudes calmness, leadership, sort of a cool swagger, someone who you can rely upon to think things through. He might not always get it right. And I'm sort of speaking from the point of view of sort of Joe Everyman. But he's thinking about what to do, and he's taking it seriously. He's not always engaged in some sort of sloganeering, some new way to kind of package kind of a bit of patriotic claptrap.
Yeah,
he wants to get the job done, and he wants to get the job.
I think that's I agree with you, and I think that's certainly coming out of the convention. I think he has projected at all times to be someone who, even if the policies have not kicked in fully yet, and even if, you know, we're not where we should be, he has projected the image of someone who cares, who gives a crap, and that contrasts so starkly with Romney.
Yeah. And I think, too, the contrast is nested in this place of consistency, where you have Romney, who's entirely inconsistent. I mean, when you go back to 2004, for example, and John Kerry, who was labeled a flip-flopper, there was one thing, one thing he said, and it wasn't even a real thing. It was the $83 billion military spending bill that he voted for in the committee and then voted against it on the floor. You know, there was that one thing. Romney, it's every damn day. I mean, what's the Huffington Post? I just saw the Huffington Post headline today. Mitt Romney today said, the president said he can't change Washington from the inside. I can. His president said, I'm having trouble changing Washington from the inside. It's difficult to be done. And basically saying that everyone has to help change Washington. Just not me. Don't leave it up to me. Everyone has to do it. It's about us. That's sort of the theme that the president laid out in his convention speech. He said, but Romney said, oh, he can change Washington from the inside. In 2007, quote, this is Mitt Romney, quote, I don't think you can change Washington from the inside. So, I mean, it's every day. He's got some new contradiction.
Right. By the way, please, let's jump on the conspiracy theory bandwagon for a second. Yeah. You have heard, is it Democratic Underground that has been sort of shouting from the rooftops the fact that it appears anyway as if Romney sort of browned himself a little bit for his appearance on, I think it was Univision?
that he
was wearing. I mean, I looked at the pictures and I actually thought it was just a really crappy pancake makeup job, and I think it still is, but it's a very funny thing to think about because he absolutely does look brownish orange.
Well, no, I mean, he's looked brown all week. I mean,
yeah, I don't think it's that. I mean, no, I think it's a funny thing to think about that he would actually. Lord knows, again, the man looks like he's in the throes of a full-on panic attack, and I think he's desperate enough to do just about anything. I'm surprised he didn't come out and just say, you know, soy Mitt Romney.
Yo, soy Mitt. Oh, man, that's hilarious. But no, he was Brown on Fox News Channel.
I'm surprised he's not starring in a telenovela at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious that Mitt Romney tans. I mean, he goes to tan. I think you almost have to, because the process of running for office, especially the office of the presidency, it is it's basically going to wear you down physically. He's been doing this since 2003, or no, not I'm sorry, 2007. So and continuously practically, but you know. I think you have to do something to make yourself look healthier, even though your body is getting ready to break down at any second.
I think he does have sort of the not at all stylish George Hamilton look going.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like if George Hamilton shopped only at Brooks Brothers, he'd look like Mitt Romney.
If George Hamilton wore dad jeans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it'd be Mitt Romney. Lots of gingham.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I mean, conversely, you have a president who is consistent on everything. I mean, the guy rarely takes a 180 on a policy. And if he does, he explains why. Well, I've evolved on this. I've evolved on same-sex marriage. So here's why I've kind of changed tact on that. You know, but this is just so everyone's concerned that here we have a fragile economy. And who do we want? Do we want this jittery, spastic guy who doesn't know what he believes, who goes off and offends Russia, and he offends China, and he offends England?
Exactly.
You know, at every step of the way, he's just stepping into it. Do we really want this guy shepherding the economy? Do we want him shepherding precarious foreign relations? No, we don't. We don't. He might look the part. And he absolutely does. He looks like he's got the central casting look of a president. We've talked about this before.
Exactly.
But that doesn't make a president. That doesn't make a president at all, especially when he just doesn't behave like one. He just seems desperate. He seems Nixonian without the flop sweat.
Yeah. Right.
So the president continues to be that leader that everyone wants. People like to go to, and this is sort of general political scientific theory, that people like to go to bed at night knowing that the president is up sitting in the Oval Office worried about the country.
Correct.
Look what it was like when Clinton was president. I think a lot of people I think one of the reasons why Clinton won so resoundingly in 1996 and why he was still so popular even through the impeachment process is everyone realized that that guy was up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, eating pizza on the phone with 10 congressmen and getting a BJ in the Oval Office. You know, that this guy was dialed in. He was on 11 all the time. And he took the job with deadly seriousness. And I think you get the same with Barack Obama. Everything you read about the president, know that this guy is thinking things through. He's got his act together, and the chances of him screwing up are few and far between. Meanwhile, here's Mitt Romney. Now, this is just the last couple of days. We're recording this show on the Thursday afternoon. Last couple of days. You know, they go from this 47% videotape into, well, let's actually capitalize on what I said in the tape, which is there are evidently 47% of Americans don't pay taxes, which is in and of itself, it sounds, oh my God, it sounds alarming. But then when you break it down, we're talking about military service members. We're talking about senior citizens who don't pay taxes on their Social Security income. You're talking about poor people, unemployed people. You know, but by and large, you're talking about people who, some of them, you know, family of four earning $50,000, they're paying payroll taxes, but they're paying very little, if any, personal income tax because of all the deductions and tax credits. So you have people working, they've got skin in the game, but they might not pay taxes. And then, oh, by the way, you've got very, very wealthy people taking advantage of massive loopholes, like, say, people who have Swiss bank accounts and their money stashed away in the Caymans. Sounds familiar.
Yes, it does.
But, you know, I go back to that phrase, skin in the game. So what they did is Mitt Romney, Chris Christie, all the Republican apparatchiks, all the surrogates started this skin in the game talking point on Tuesday and Wednesday.
It's always fun to watch the exact words come out of so many people's mouths.
I know.
Yeah. It really is as if it comes down from on high and just there. Here's the words of the day.
And it was skin in the game. That's a thing. We want everybody to have skin in the game. And I mean, Mitt Romney even said, I think people will like paying taxes. I think people will really enjoy it. People will feel good about paying taxes. That's what Mitt Romney said. The anti-tax Republican Party is suddenly pro-tax. They're suddenly anti.
Well, they're pro-tax on you know, the people who aren't making enough money to be able to pay taxes, where if they pay taxes, you know, they don't eat one day a week.
That's right. But, I mean, they're looking at this through a skewed perspective. I mean, what they're doing, much like the their most recent redistribution line, they're counting on a misinterpretation of what they're talking about. So skin in the game, what they're hoping people will think is that 47% of Americans are just skipping out on their taxes, either just not refusing to pay them, or they're just freeloaders and welfare queens collecting their Obama bucks and not putting anything back into the system, which is completely false. What we know is the reason 47% of Americans don't pay taxes because deductions, tax credits, tax cuts, in fact, George W. Bush's tax cuts, and then Ronald Reagan's tax cuts, every time those occurred, the number of people off the rolls skyrocketed. George W. Bush even said after his tax cut, he said, I want to get 5 million people off the rolls. And he did. He did. 5 million people dropped off the tax roll. So, you know, they're hoping people won't know that. They won't know that senior citizens don't pay taxes on their Social Security income. So what they're hoping is they're hoping for the welfare queen thing to be interpreted. But it's not. So in saying that we want everyone to pay taxes, what they're really saying is we're going to roll back the tax cuts and we're going to get rid of all those deductions and tax credits. That's kind of what they're saying. That's how you get everyone's skin in the game. You get rid of all those things that's preventing them from paying taxes in the first place. It's, of course, it's completely, they'll never, ever, ever, ever do that. They never will. Likewise, they'll always be redistributionists. And so these two things are in exact conflict. One day they're talking about getting skin in the game. Next day, they're opposed to redistribution, which is the collection of taxes and spending on government programs, like the military, and like balancing Rick Perry's budget in Texas, or paying for disaster relief for Bobby Jindal, or healthcare clinics for Paul Ryan, or Ron Paul's Social Security checks. It's all redistributed wealth. Taxes collected and then redistributed out to other things.
You obviously just haven't seen the light about Ron Paul.
I know. Ron Paul means liberty.
Liberty.
Liberty. We don't know how we're going to get there, but it's going to be liberty. Liberty eventually. Vote for Ron Paul. That's step number one.
Ron Paul and his whimsical wheezing jalopy.
Step one, vote for Ron Paul. Step two, question mark. Step three, liberty.
Liberty.
Step two, we just don't know. We don't know how he'll do it. But there'll be liberty at the other end.
Well, he's Ron Paul.
He's Ron Paul.
That's it. He's Ron Paul. It's like that scene with the two stoners in Can't Hardly Wait talking about Preston. You know, he's Preston. You know, he's Ron Paul. Sure. I don't know how to describe him. He wears T-shirts. He's got hair. He's kind of tall.
So what people are hearing, ultimately, and this is a long way to get to this point, but people are hearing inconsistency and contradictions. They're hearing an utterly confused message. One day it's pro-tax, everyone's skin in the game. The next day it's anti-tax. Oh, I'm not a redistributionist. And both, I mean, Mitt Romney was saying this. God, Michelle Malkin and Sean Hannity were going off about this. Oh, the president's in favor of collectivism and socialism and Red Scare. They were leaning on the Red Scare McCarthy button yesterday on Hannity. I mean, all over talk radio. That's all they're talking about. President's right. A communist. No, no, no. If you listen to the whole tape, president goes on to say very positive things about decentralizing wealth and making sure that the wealth has an opportunity to grow in the marketplace. A lot of capitalistic ideas. In the same speech in which he says, I consider myself to be a redistributionist. But that's not revelatory. Everyone's a redistributionist.
You know what's interesting? I hate to bring up the Ezra Klein piece yet again in Bloomberg. Seriously, read it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that he mentions is how it's tougher to be poor, actually. You know, Romney's comment that people who are poor, that 47% who he can never pressure them to take responsibility for themselves. And the reality is that if you are poor or you are lower middle class, especially, you know, middle class, but lower middle class, you are actually taking much more responsibility for your life, because there are things that you can't just shrug off. There are things that you can't buy your way out of. You know, you have to you can't have pay somebody to take care of your kids. You can't pay somebody to cook your meals or any of that. And you have to actually think about where everything goes. And that leads to something called decision fatigue. Which basically means, and it's true, I mean, think about it. If you are in a position where you're constantly forced to make difficult decisions, mm-hmm. it wears you down, and it's very hard to make the right one. What's interesting is listening to you describe it, Romney is poor when it comes to how he's doing in this race. Meaning, since he's not on top of the world and can't stay steady and focused, he's behind, and what that's causing him to do is just make rash decisions, yeah. Because he's not in a position where he can just say, look, you know what, we're on course, we're doing the right thing, whatever we're doing is working, we're ahead, and that means he gets to relax and lay back and just be steady and not spastic. Instead, what you're getting is, since they're the ones who are behind, and of course, you know, look, you find this in any political campaign, when somebody's ahead and somebody's losing, the person who's losing will try anything to get ahead. And they make the mistake of just constantly churning out new things and constantly putting on new faces and constantly making these decisions that really are erratic and crazy decisions.
And that's
what Romney's doing right now.
And it's the nature of his campaign, too. If you read the Politico piece, his chief strategist, Stuart Stevens. That's tough to say, by the way. Chief strategist Stuart Stevens.
I'm not going to try.
he's just as flighty as Romney is. So there's no one with discipline inside the campaign, at least at the upper echelons of that leadership structure, to say, you know what, we have to be disciplined here. We have a message. God only knows what it is. But we have to stick to it. We're not going to take every left turn based on what Rush Limbaugh says one day versus what Peggy Noonan says the next day versus what Paul Ryan says the day after that. We have to stick. Because we look really, really bad. Dude, look like the most inconsistent, awkward, jittery bunch of idiots in the world.
What it reminds me of, when I used to work in news, anybody who's ever worked in the news business or the TV business, but certainly in news, because news is a daily product as opposed to, like, you know, NBC trying to put on, you know, like a show a week, or, you know, like, all right, that show's not working, we can pull that off. But news is like a daily thing. When you're behind in the ratings, it's shocking to watch all of the different sort of iterations, the desperate moves that television stations will go through to try to get people to watch. You know, even when I was at MSNBC, In the period after sort of 9/11 and the war distracted everybody, mm-hmm. and we had to get back to just doing regular programming. I mean, the joke that I put it in my book. The joke that we used to make was, you know, MSNBC's motto should be, if you've seen it on our air for 14 days, that's 13 days too long. Because it was a constant shift. It was a constant desperate change to try to get people to watch, and every television station and network will do that when you're really, really hurting with ratings. And yeah, that's what Romney's doing right now. He's behind, and he's making really stupid decisions in an effort to he's throwing everything at the wall, hoping something sticks.
Yeah, and again, this goes back to my original thesis in all of this: the comparison, the contrast between the two candidates that people are seeing. They're seeing this irrational, inconsistent, spastic Romney campaign just throwing everything against the wall to hope it sticks. Meanwhile, they see the president, who is calm, steady, disciplined. You know, whether or not they agree with him, that's another story. But what they're seeing is someone who's competent enough to do the job. And I think that means the world to people who are not necessarily dialed into the day-to-day political drama. You know, even people who, you know, pick and choose what they agree with on both sides. But they just want someone who's going to be presidential, who's not going to embarrass them. You know, and I think that's what Mitt Romney is going to be, an embarrassment. Mitt Romney is channeling all the worst aspects of McCain Palin and, you know, just all of the weird, unpredictable, uncomfortable, insecure, you know, scattershot ways. And it's just not making people happy. People who just want steadiness and consistency. So, hey, after party's coming up tomorrow. Lots of stuff to talk about, including Rush Limbaugh's very small penis. We're also going to talk about...
Boy, thank you for springing that one on me.
We're going to talk a lot about TV, too, and I've got some great clips, including an actual Arnold Schwarzenegger voicemail message. That's coming up on the after party. We'll see you then, folks.